Thank you, bees. Wrap it up. Now, A's, take 1 minute, please, and let B's know how they did. Also, and including how it felt you for you, A, to be listened to and intuited in that way. Okay, take 1 minute, A's. Give B's some feedback.
Which six emotions are you going to use? Are you going to use that standard set? You're going to use the standard set that you gave me this afternoon?
Sadness, you know, the four negatives, and happiness, and peacefulness.
Okay, thank you. All right, so now you're going to switch roles. All right, so this time, B's, you'll be the one describing a situation that's, you know, important to you, trying to do, you know, describe the circumstances and events as much as possible without getting into your inner life. Meanwhile, A's are going to be trying to sense beneath the surface and imagine what it's like for you. Both at, you know, as they kind of intuit, as you, A's, intuit the feeling state of B's, and also kind of more imagine the state of mind of B's. Okay? Ready? So, let's see. B's, ready, begin.
It's a long, long day. The details involved in the Sutter, the details involved in changing over the Sutter are pretty intense. I'm having to do a lot of conservation of staff. A number of my people are so unhappy that they're almost ready to walk if this doesn't get better. Fortunately, today we had somebody come from the center and it's going to get better. And my office manager has been there till 9 o'clock at night for the last 2 weeks straight. It reminds me, I did not book a hotel because I wasn't sure where we...
Okay, good job. So, A's, what's your best guess of that third emotion? Okay? All right, you got it? B's, you got your best guess of that third emotion? Okay, now... share with each other what was really being communicated by B's. And A's, you know, share your guesses. So A's, first A's, share your guesses. B's, confirm or deny. Okay?
So now we're going to let these people talk a lot. No long lectures.
I'm done with that.
There's a very good piece.
I think it would be better in writing. But it really had I could see people were initially a little twitchy, and then... You got momentum. It was good. It was really great.
Okay. Liz. Okay, come back. All right, let's see. Okay. All right. Okay, A, let's see. A's. How many A's? How many A's? How many A's got all three emotions right?
Did.
Yay! Raise that hand high. Yay! Okay, good. How many A's got two out of three right?
All right.
Okay, wow. How many A's got one out of three right? All right, okay. How many A's got none right? Oh, no, I don't know. Okay. Now, I want to really stress that this is a wacky experiment, and it's really about both people, right? It really is. It's not. So if you didn't get very many right, doesn't mean that you're tone deaf and have no empathy, you know. But isn't it interesting that people got any right, right? You know, I didn't do the statistics on, you know, getting one out of six or some number like that, probably about right, but people did better than chance, you know, and teams did better than chance. Okay? So we want to open it up now. You've been really kind to let us kind of roll on here. So we want to talk now for the last 15, 20 minutes tonight about what you've experienced, what you learned, what your questions might be. Okay? So, go. Keith?
Two things. Some of these emotions are very close to each other. And I feel like I'm definitely an imperfect transmitter. Anger and sadness are very close. Happy and peaceful are very close. You know, I kind of fluctuated a little bit, you know, even though I was trying to focus on one. The second thing is, I think we're all inclined to want our partner to succeed. Mm. And, you know, we have an inclination to give them a clue.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Sure.
It's very difficult to be completely impassive.
Yeah.
And then you have to cover that up.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. All fair points. Other people? Okay.
Well, it's hard to get too deep into any of those feelings in seconds. So I think that the point that this gentleman made too is, you know, if you're more deeply into that state, they're easier to distinguish personally and for somebody else too.
Yeah, right. Totally true. Yeah. The remarkable thing is that under these conditions, that you got any of them.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's interesting. Okay, yeah?
I was wondering on the system there, how can we get shortchanged on the positive? and I was thinking it would take you back to
the amygdala.
No, but I was thinking it would be more of a balanced thing, you know, like a symmetrical thing, like sadness, happiness, anger, peacefulness, shame, whatever the opposite of that would be.
Yeah,
actually very good. I want to point out that Train Your Brain, 13 from February. If you go back and pick that up, on the back, we'll pass this around, is a diagram that's taken from Pluchik, a guy, Pluchik, who basically did this color wheel of emotions in terms of opposition. Mm-hmm. And this has to go back in the back. Let me show you that. And you can divide emotions in terms of activities, positive, negatives, and all of that. And that's a way of kind of looking at these things. And you put that together with Ekman and the fact that a lot of these facial expressions are universals, and you realize that this is basically the palette color wheel for the nervous system to generate emotional responses. These were just six that we picked out, and they're corollaries right there, but they're not really opposite. You know, you could put these into a color wheel that had oppositions, you know, joy, fear, for example, that kind of thing worked through.
Okay.
And Rick, it's on the website. You just
have
one there.
Right, I have just one there. But the guy Pluchik, Pluchik, Robert Pluchik, is where you can go to get that. If you Google him, you'll find that color wheel on the net.
Also, with states, can you talk about higher states, mirroring of higher states, like the Zen master and the student, and transmission of Satori, and those kinds of things. I've even heard reading a dialogue of a teacher, a spiritual teacher, and then some student of his sort of getting it. And then the spiritual teacher says, or the student wants to know, how did he know that the student had rocked it or whatever? And the spiritual teacher's response is, when a man sees his own face, he recognizes it. So it's like this dual thing where the student has to recognize it in the teacher, but the teacher has to recognize it in the student, and then verify it so it's sustained. Has there been any study on that kind of mirroring?
There's no systematic Western. There's no systematic, at least I'm aware of, there's no systematic Western scientific study of the concepts of guru transmission. But at the same time, I think in terms of what you're talking about, I think there is a 2,500 year tradition of this occurring. If you go back in the Buddhist lexicon of stories, the Buddha was giving a sermon, and he got 5,000 people sitting to watch him, and the sermon was holding up a flower. And the story goes, 40% of the people there became enlightened on the spot. Now that has something to do with the flower and a great deal to do with the human being sitting there. For various reasons, I'll use an example not for politics, but you listen to Barack Obama give a speech, and however you feel about Barack and his politics, there's an evocation of something that happens that is a transmission from him to you and evokes something inside, at least for me. And so I'll own that. But I think that is very important. I think in terms of that empathy works both ways. It is both a way of transmitting a state as it is as a way of perceiving a state. And I think that when we talk about somebody becoming enlightened because they've perceived a sense of the other, they've perceived in their master Satori, or that evocation in them of what that state must be like creates a resonance, and literally an electrical oscillation resonance, in my view, that evokes that state right there. And so I think that's for me is the process of transmission. So I think that ultimately a study like that will probably get done.
And it seems that there are certain things that are transmitted readily. Like if you're sitting in a room with somebody who's laughing hilariously, there's a certain contagion to that.
That's what I talked about, yeah.
Yeah, and I think when there's somebody who's so grounded in a certain state of mind, whether it's a suppressed parietal lobe or whatever, that also might be easily transmittable and contagious.
I think it's cool to speculate about this stuff, right? But really the question is, what's the takeaway for you personally, right? And one thing to reflect on is, what was your actual experience during those moments when you actually really did get a sense of what your partner was experiencing? Either during the highly artificial and difficult exercise we took you through at the very end as an experiment, as well as previously, when you really could get what they were feeling. What was that like for you? What did you notice was happening when you got what was going on with the other person? Yeah.
I thought, this can't be right.
Yet it was, I assume, right?
It was, yeah. I didn't trust my own ability to sense it.
Yeah. Sorry. Other people.
There's an important lesson right there.
Yeah. Other people, what did you get? What did you feel? Or what was the ring of truth? How was that? What characterized that moment? Yeah.
I got a real sense of how little I could connect with anything.
by noticing what it was like when you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I found it very difficult, and in almost every way, and included in that is thinking about my own projection, transference, all these crazy things.
Yeah. Very important piece out of that is to just accept that as what is and realize that that this kind of empathic understanding, from what we know about watching, about looking at other kinds of studies, this is trainable. That this is something that, with work, can be developed wherever you start from. There, what I said at the beginning of my talk, there is a genetic range of this ability. You can think of that there's a more or less greater propensity to have neurons that do this mirroring in various people. But all of it is trainable, just like you can, you know, maybe you're not going to be, you know, a concert pianist, but you can train yourself to play the piano.
Can I ask another question? You may want to pass on this.
I want
to... I'll own this. I go to weddings and I cry. I have an impulse to weep. At bar mitzvahs and graduations and weddings. And okay, explain me that. pass.
Well, even if we did, would it be helpful to you? You know?
It would be just a matter of interest, something loud about it.
I think we're deeply emotional animals, and there are certain tribal rituals, even apart from whatever might be acculturated, right, in us, that really resonates with them. And I think that's
everybody
true.
Everybody else is happy.
Yeah.
Everybody's throwing hats in the air.
Yeah.
But not everybody. A significant percentage weak.
Yeah. Actually, if I could, I really want to... Why it's interesting to ask, if you think, what is empathy? Empathy is where your attention goes, right? I had a teacher who called it the bodily sacrifice of attention. It's a very profound way to think about it, right? So, in a way, a lot of the teachings that in the contemplative traditions have to do with where does attention go, right? Can you really rest your attention in that other person? And what helps you give your attention over to that other person so it can really go down the rabbit hole? I mean, that's really the interesting and powerful takeaway, right? What will help guide your attention so it really stays with that other person so you can sustain it? You know, in terms of meditation, there are several main factors. In terms of attention, there's the application of attention and then the sustaining of attention. Can you apply your attention to that other person and then sustain it? And then can you ask that other person to do that for you? Right? Can you do that? Can you ask them to keep looking at you in the eyes in some civil and appropriate and effective way? Right? And can you ask them to keep with you for 3 minutes without interrupting every 12 seconds or 18 seconds or something like that? Can you do that? I mean, that's where the value is. That's where the power is. And I think going to your point about transmission, one of the things that really characterizes people who I think are great teachers is you really feel the weight of their attention. I mean, it's said the Dalai Lama meets, you know, probably hundreds of people a day commonly. You really feel like for your 10 seconds or 10 minutes, you know, you are the person he's thinking about. He's not working his way down the rope line, you know, to shake hands with the next donor. You're it, right? Can we give each other that kind of weight of attention, and can we ask for it? And we know what it's like when we feel it. Isn't it powerful when we feel that weight of attention? Imagine what we do for other people when we give them that weight of attention. And so the question, the key question is, from tonight, is what helps you do that? Okay? Because if you know what helps you do that for real when you go home tonight, when you go to work tomorrow, you know, then you're more able to ask for that from other people. That's the gold. That's what's valuable. So any questions or comments about that? Yeah.
I think you answered the question that's coming up, which is to how do you distinguish between projection and empathy?
I think there's a lot of not knowing, right? I think what Bill said was quite wonderful, that, I mean, there's a delicate balance here where we are speculating in our own minds in an active way about what might be going on in the other person. One thing that Rick and I resist about the mirror neuron, you know, neural Wi-Fi meme floating around is that it has this kind of passive quality to it, and it kind of romanticizes, and we think massively overstates the degree to which we're actually connected with each other. I mean, to connect, well, that's E.M. Forster's line, only connect to connect, we have to construct connection often. We have to do something to connect. We have to actively imagine what it's like for the other person. But we can't go too far. Because if we go too far, if we start speculating all over the place, and then if we start getting prosecutorial about it, as we often do, you know, then we're in deep trouble, and then I think we're projecting on them. So I think there's a kind of deep not knowing, a deep respect that's involved in being with another person, where we look at them and we actually don't know. We have a feeling that who they are and what they are right now is the product of 10,000 causes and conditions that we don't understand, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And through some amazing process, here they are in our living room or across the desk from us today.
Right. I think the code there for me would be the preservation of doubt in the interaction and the absence of ego. Projection is me, I. And the preservation of doubt is all about what is it with you, you know. And I think there's that subtlety, but I think that's the way that to do that.
So curiosity,
right.
Not
right.
Knowing. Right. These are great. This is the good stuff. What helps you have that kind of presence with another person, where you're both receiving, but you're not so flooded by what you're receiving that you can't stay present. I mean, paradoxically, what often gets in our way to be empathic is we're too flooded by the other person. Mm-hmm. I actually imagine being sometimes a willow tree, where the other person is whistling through, but I can stay present with that other person. I'm not knocked over by them. See?
Not the whomping willow of Harry Potter, though.
No. I don't think I ever got very far with Harry, but anyway. How about other people? What helps you stay present? You know, present and empathic, yeah.
Well, I just found that exercise was really interesting tonight in that taking away of the context, all the gestures, the expressions, and getting down to something that was like as masked as possible. But I found myself still looking for the muscle twitches, the curl of the lip, the eye. If that's still, are we still looking for cues in that
yes.
moment of being present and imagining what would I feel like with that cue and that.
Yes. I think the real important thing for me in Rick's exercise is to take you back to the subtlety. You know, this again speaks to the fact that mirror neurons aren't nothing special. And one of the things that goes on when you are in a room or you're with somebody and you have this sort of sixth sense about what's going on with them is the fact that you are picking up these subtle cues, you're just not noting it. That, I think, is also the strength in Ekman's work, that you become more consciously aware of what are these subtle cues that you should look for and how would you pick them up. The work on emotions also tells you which emotions are often confused. Like fear and disgust are real close. You know, those kinds of things. And you can go in, you know, and you can go in, and that's where, for example, the kernel of doubt as to what's going on with the other can really grow if you understand where your sources of confusion are. If you test yourself in these kinds of paradigms and you say, you know, I'm real good at figuring out the difference between sadness and fear, but I'm not so good at picking out the difference between anger and shame. Me, myself, as I put myself into this test, then that gives you some strength in understanding what it is about other people that you're going to have difficulty reading, where you should apply your skill sets and try to learn different ways of picking out, say, any one of these other distinctions. And so I'd like to send you to ECMO's work and kind of look at it for a little bit and try to get an idea about, you know, where you might be able to get greater facility.
Yeah, I think the opportunity is to realize how much you can actually pick up when very little is being transmitted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've all had that experience, haven't we? Where you're in an airport, someone is sitting there, you don't know them, they're not saying a word, they're reading a detective novel or they're just flipping through a paper. And you just get a vibe. You get a vibe. And you're probably pretty accurate. You know, definitely better than chance. Not perfect, but pretty darn accurate. Isn't it amazing? And I think another key here is our willingness to actually be affected by another person, you know, to actually be affected by them. I think one thing that blocks empathy is we don't want to let ourselves be affected. or we feel too affected, so we just do a complete core dump, you know, in a nuclear reactor and shut the whole darn thing down. We don't let ourselves be affected at all.
You start acting like a New Yorker.
Yeah, so the paradoxical trick is to feel so strong and centered and solid in yourself, you know, that your trunk is so grounded and rooted deeply in the earth that you can really let the other person whistle through your leaves, right? You can really let that other person affect you. Yeah. And then we'll just take a few more minutes and wrap up.
It seems interesting. Okay, in the airplane scenario where, say, you're sitting next to somebody who's working on a laptop or flipping a magazine, and you get that vibe, but because of our societal boundaries, mm-hmm. we don't acknowledge it. We don't make that connection. We just sit there for like 6 hours, mm-hmm. totally forcing that disconnect. But, I mean, why do we do that? You know, why do we not take that leap and say, hey, what's going on with you? Just simply because we don't know.
Yeah, could you say for yourself, maybe, what that is like for you or what you've sensed on the receiving end from other people? Because don't forget, you know, we talk ourselves about how we might separate or distance from others. Boy, have we not been on the receiving end 10,000 mm-hmm. times ourselves? So I'm putting on the spot a little bit. Do you care to say anything, though?
Well, I mean, personally, I've never had anybody, you know, ask.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't say, don't talk to me. I don't like you. Or, a couple of times I've said, the seat's taken, but...
This seat's taken, and I'm in it.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's, I would be really open to talk to somebody if the conversation presented itself.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, I often reflect on this as a couples counselor, that empathy is what brings us together, and it's one of the first casualties in a long-term relationship.
Right.
You know, and yet it's so powerful to simply be empathic. You know, and another thing, too, when you're empathic, you're not waiving your rights. Oftentimes we think that if I empathize with you, I somehow am giving you agreement, right? Or I'm approving you, or I'm rewarding you for being a jerk. No, I'm just being empathic. Doesn't mean I agree with you. Doesn't mean I'm waiving my rights. It actually helps to remember that. That's part of feeling like you have a strong trunk rooted in the earth. You know, you are reserving your rights while you fully enter the world of the other person. I think also about someone like Margaret Mead, you know, going into the New Guinea tribes people or whoever, you know, the cannibals, whatnot. You know, you just enter their world without judgment for a while, but you're retaining your rights to go back to your own home base and judge for yourself what you really think.
Yeah. But it is an act of generosity.
It's an act of generosity.
I think it's an act of generosity. And therefore, when you feel if you feel violated, mm-hmm. you're not much inclined to be generous.
With your empathy, you mean?
Exactly.
Ah.
And so I think the normal response, or at least my normal response, is not to be empathic when I feel that someone has violated me in some fashion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Others have felt that way? Yeah. Well, maybe this, I'd like to respond and then maybe we'll wrap on that. And we're going to be on this topic. Our next meeting is going to be about feeling felt. And the ways in which we want to feel felt and maybe feel frustrated about feeling felt. In other words, we want to feel received. We want to feel understood. We want to feel other people get the message and that they care enough about us to even want to know what it's really like to be you, to be me. All right? So we're going to stay with this. But what I would say is that I think, first of all, it's a very natural response. I think sometimes we withhold empathy. I'll be quite candid. You know, growing up, one of my little weapons in my war with my parents was to withhold empathy and love. All right? And it's one of the hardest things in the world as a parent. I speak personally as well when you're with your kids, and they're withholding that. So it's very natural on the one hand. On the other hand, I would offer a view, which see for yourself if you think it's true, that one of your strongest moves in a difficult relationship is to be empathic with that other person. By the way, you can be empathic without giving empathy. In other words, you can be empathic by gathering tons of useful information about what that person is wanting, what they're feeling, what their deeper dynamics are, what the deeper wants and yearnings are underneath the surface that are causing a lot of trouble in the way they're coming out unskillfully, right? Empathy gives you tons of information.
Which thereby gives you power.
Yeah, it's gold to have some great idea, have a lot more clarity about the real intentions and the deep dynamics, the deep imperatives, the hot buttons of that other person, and frankly, why you're pissing them off. Right, if that's actually the case. That's pretty useful to know, right? Doesn't mean you give up your rights, but boy, is that really useful to know. And then very often just giving empathy to another person is very calming and soothing and healing in a relationship. You know, even though it's not our reactive tendency, very understandably, but boy, I offer the view that it's a wonderful, powerful move. Okay, so on that note, we've run out of airtime here. We've run out of runway. So thank you, and we'll see you hopefully next month. All right, take care.
Take care.